That was In Their Absence by Jeremy Darling. We have Jeremy on the phone with us right now. Jeremy is with the Salvage Project in Minneapolis, and he is coming to our area today and also tomorrow to be performing at Coulee Rock Church this morning and then at the Salvation Army in La Crosse tomorrow. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning. How are you?
I am doing fine. Now, you are from the Twin Cities area. You're with the Salvage Project. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, so about, it was 2 years ago, April 2014, I was playing in a prison here, a women's prison with my sister. I had been doing concerts in prisons in the area starting in about 2011. But in 2014, I did the women's prison here with my sister, and we did two shows back-to-back for two different groups of women, 60-minute concerts. The first group just wept through most of the concert. The next group came completely unglued, and I finally just broke down and cried towards the end. And actually, it was that song you just played that really sort of shattered the room. And I had them all stand up and sing Amazing Grace. I shared the gospel. And I got in my car that night, and I just told the Lord, I can't keep doing this anymore as a volunteer. I can't keep going back to work. I was a web designer by trade. And I said, I can't keep going back to work knowing these opportunities are out there. And my life and my work really through church growing up, I really felt like God wants us to be near the broken and those that society sort of cast aside. I mean, that's who Jesus spent his time with exclusively in his three-year ministry. And so I went home and I talked to my dad and I said, I got to get out. I want to do ministry full-time in some way. So we initially thought about maybe raising support for a missionary organization, but I would have had to take a crippling pay cut to do that. So I ended up meeting, sort of by accident, a man in North Carolina who's a retired CPA, and he just files paperwork for Christian nonprofits for free. Mm-hmm. So he filed my paperwork, 28 pages, and that was in June 2014. And not a couple of days later, someone got wind of what I was doing and gave me a very large check, not enough to live off of, but enough that I could begin kind of slowly transitioning to ministry and begin raising support on my own. 4 days later, no joke, I got fired from my job. They didn't know I was doing this. I had just been given a raise and a glowing review. And they fired me. And the reasons are still to this day very murky. So I walked out. I'd just been fired. I walked out beaming.
All right, I've been fired.
But also, I mean, I was elated and humiliated. It was a very strange feeling to be going through. But I never looked back, and God has made it virtually impossible for me to do anything else at this point. So in the last almost 2 years, 20 months or so, I've toured a third of the country, prisons, shelters, halfway houses. I only tour 7 days a month, but we'll do two or three shows a day in whatever city I'm in with my band. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten to share the gospel with close to 3,000 people, seen about 400 pray to receive Christ in that time. When I'm not on the road, I work locally here in the Twin Cities. I go all around the city doing music for people in hospice care, mm-hmm. people with AIDS, disabilities, dementia. I do a lot of work now with homeless and at-risk youth. Probably two or three days a week, I'm hanging out at youth shelters doing songwriting groups or concerts for them. That has been life-changing in and of itself. It's one thing, you know, being in a prison with men or women that have grown up and ruined their lives. Many of them came from very broken homes. But they're there, you know, because they did something very bad, whether or not they were a victim as a child. Something very different being around an 8, 9, 10-year-old that's been abused sexually or physically for years and is trying to cope and manage. And literally, it's safer for them to be in a home, a group home, or this shelter than to be in their own house with a family. So that's altered my perspective even more. I will say this. I've been following the Lord since I was a little kid. I have learned more in the last 2 years than maybe the last 20 combined. It's been an unbelievable set of circumstances that God has brought in. So that, in a nutshell, is the Salvage Project, repurposing broken lives. My goal is to go where people are at the bottom, because when you're at the bottom, you only have one direction to reach, or you die, and sing to them. I mean, when you're at the bottom, you take a rope from a snake to get out of the pit and just deal with the snake later. So I want my music to be that rope. And give them the gospel through songs, which I believe is an incredibly effective way of reaching people very quickly.
It touches the heart, doesn't it?
Yeah, anyone listening, you remember that one song and that one point in life that just made you weep or broke you in some way. I don't know what it is about music. I mean, I played for dementia patients that could not speak or even make eye contact, who would sit up and sing along to an old Elvis Presley hymn or Johnny Cash song. Yeah. I mean, I've not seen anything like it. I've seen kids in just completely manic, chaotic nuclear meltdowns sit down and listen for an hour to songs. I don't know what it is, but it's a powerful tool for the gospel.
I mean, wouldn't it be like a lot more comfortable for you just to go up on some stage at some Christian music festival or sing, in church? Wouldn't that be a lot easier for you?
Darla, you're opening up Pandora's box by bringing that up.
I know.
For years, I told people, I think I'd rather have my fingernails pulled out with pliers than to go around to churches and sing to the choir. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But I couldn't do it. Look, we live in the richest, most overstimulated culture that has ever existed in humanity, where the world does not need more entertainers. It needs fathers. And I can be that to my two boys. I've been married 13 years now to the only girlfriend I ever had. We got a third boy on the way. I can be a father. I can be a husband first. And whatever time God gives me outside of that, I want to bring to the very, very absolute darkest places, somebody will let me come in and sing, because those people want out. The rich man did not want what Jesus was offering. I mean, think about that. Jesus Christ offered him salvation. He walked away, and Jesus just let him walk away. So I have no interest in trying to pander to a rich generation, convincing them they need something they don't think they need. In 20 years, they'll have a divorce and an STD and an out-of-wedlock pregnancy or two, and they'll come crawling back to the church. And when they do, I'll be there, arms open. Come on in. But I don't have any interest in trying to spend my time either in churches or with people that think they're already good enough. Jesus went to the lepers and the prostitutes, the people that nobody would touch, and he touched them. And I want to do the same.
How do you see God working? You're called to the broken. You're called to those who are down and out. You're called to repurpose those broken lives. How do you see God working in the lives of people that he puts in your path?
Well, one of the big things I do when I tour, I helped plant a church 17 years ago called The Rock. That's actually where I met my wife.
So you're in that anti-church.
Correct. I love church. The local church is what's going to help save the world. But I'm committed to that local church. So Cooley Rock is an extension of our Rock Church here in Minnesota. We're a part of a global movement of churches called GCC, Great Commission Church. We have churches in, I think, 24 states, about 90 cities. We have churches in Latin America, Ukraine, Italy, Germany, Philippines, and I think in China. My dad sits on the board. He's one of the most beloved speakers in our movement, and he's been a tremendous father. So I'm known through this movement because people know my father. I can go to any one of the 24 states we have a church. We've got like 8 churches in Ohio. There's 5 here in Minneapolis. There's 6 in Colorado. I go to any one of those churches. I have a home to sleep in, food to eat, a car to borrow, and no questions asked. So I never stay in hotels. And then I have a built-in community that God can work through of believers that I know are interested in the hurting and the broken. By and large, I'm not a church basher, but by and large, the church in America is in shambles. They're not interested in difficult people. They want to expand their sanctuary or change the color of their carpet. Not all, but many. So I can go into these cities with our churches and our affiliation and know these are churches I can trust. So I bring their pastors, their youth into these prisons, these shelters with me so they can see what I'm doing. Sometimes I make them my band. I'll send them my songs in advance, have them learn my songs, get them involved, help them to see, one, how easy it is to love hurting people and how much it will touch your own life. But then I have a community I can leave in that city and know they'll go back and continue building those relationships and building those connections. So we'll come back, for a visit to one of our Kansas City churches and back to one of the women's shelters, and a girl comes up and says, "Hey, I've been going to Bible study every week, and I got baptized a week." Well, that's what we're doing. I don't just want to give you the gospel and leave. I want to give you the gospel, then insert you into the community of people that will love you and will build into you, or welcome you when you're out of prison. We'll meet you at the gate when you're out of prison. And many churches just don't know how to get in. They don't know. Oftentimes, as well-meaning as they are, they don't even know there's a women's shelter next door to their church.
Right.
And it took me just Googling what was in their area to say, guys, there's a place like 8 miles away from you. Oh, we had no idea. Well, let's go in. Mm-hmm. Let's go in and love those people. And then it impacts their youth, their pastors, their church to see that, look, you can't just sit around and wait for someone, you know, who's an alcoholic to go, oh, I'm going to go to church today. I want to quit drinking. I mean, that's what we do often as Christians. We're waiting for these people to just walk in and be like, oh, I found you because I was at the end of my rope and I got the end of the bottle and said, I need Jesus. I mean, sometimes that happens. But if we really want to fill our pews with bodies, then we need to go out to where these people are and love them where they are, meet them on their terms, on their turf, and show them Jesus. That's exactly what Jesus did. Walking around, mm-hmm. touching people that nobody would touch, and giving them the gospel. So, I mean, it would take 5 hours to tell you some of the unbelievable stories that God has done, supernatural stories in the last 2 years. And I'm sustained entirely by donors. As a self-sustaining missionary, I've gone out and raised support to people all over the country that are supporting me monthly. And I continue to need that. I continue to raise support. It's always a need, certainly for ministries. But I'm sustained entirely by this nationwide body of Christ. So they get to know, even if God has not allowed them, for whatever reason, if their job or their phase in life, to get out and do these things, they can know their money's going to that cause and is reaching people for Christ.
I'm sure there's many people, many lives that stick out in your mind over the past couple of years of ministry. Do you have anyone in particular, any situation in particular that really transformed
you? Stories that were very profound, and they actually both involved that song in their absence. The night my sister and I were at this women's prison where my life changed, the second group of women we played for, there was a woman all the way in the back. And I remember looking at her, and she just looked so out of place, very pretty, blue eyes, black hair. I'd never seen a woman with blue eyes and black hair. And she was directly in my line of sight, all the way in the back in a row by herself. And I kept wondering all night, why are you here? Mm-hmm. What did you do? And when I got to In Their Absence, I began to talk about what that song means, that God's great desire is to replace everything you were denied as a child, to be your mother, to be the father that you never had, to be the joy, the peace that you deserved as a child but were never given. And then I started talking about my boys, the privilege God's given me of raising my sons. And as soon as I said that, she grabbed her face and she began to weep. And she'd been holding real strong up until that point. I could tell she was clenching her jaw. And it caught me so off guard, that's when I began to weep, and that's when the whole room just fell apart. And I never forgot that girl for a year. She became, in my mind, the idea of the Salvage Project. A year later, almost to the day, this is April 2015, I drove 50 miles north to Wyoming, Minnesota, to meet with an organization called MEC, Missionary Evangelism to Corrections. And I was going to volunteer with their organization, because that's what I do with the Salvage Project. I just find people that are already in, and I work with them. So I'm sitting in this house in Wyoming, Minnesota on a Saturday morning. I was reluctant to be there because Saturday is his family day. And I met with this old couple that runs the ministry. And some other guys were there to get their training in so they could volunteer too. And then a woman came in and sat down. So it's just the four of us. And this old couple said, why don't you each tell your testimony about why you're here? So one by one, these individuals are just talking about how God brought them there. And then it gets to this woman. And she begins to tell an incredibly harrowing testimony, abused her and her mom by her father her entire life. They finally run away in the middle of the night at 14. She's 14 out, right into the arms of another abusive man. She leaves, emancipates herself from her parents at 15, and ends up in a series of exclusively abusive relationships for the next 15 years. Has a couple of kids. They don't want anything to do with her. Gets pregnant with this other guy. Now she's got a two-year-old. Leaves this two-year-old's father for some other younger drug addict. She's now addicted to pills. One day she leaves for work, leaves her kid at home, and her drug addict boyfriend beats the two-year-old into a coma. Mm. She's arrested at work for leaving her son with a known drug addict, and while she's in jail, her son dies. She's so inconsolable, they brought in a chaplain to try and pray with her, and she finds Christ. She ends up going to the women's prison where I often played, but got out a year early. Now she's loving Jesus, but living in a homeless shelter, working part-time for a church, and she just wants to let people and go back and do for someone else what was done for her. So I'm now crying. Now everyone looks at me because it's my turn to tell my story, and I looked at her. I said, it's stories like yours that have me doing what I'm doing. I said, in fact, I was at the women's prison just a year ago this week, and that was where my life really changed. And she looked at me and smiled, like a weird smile, and I leaned in. I said, were you there? She said, yeah, I was there. And I leaned in closer. I said, were you in the first or second group? Because I had to know. She said, I was in the second group. And then I looked at her closer, and she had blue eyes, long black hair. And I remembered, this is the girl. This is the girl I've been thinking about for a year. I've been talking about for a year. And she's sitting right in front of me. And I leaned in. I said, were you in the back all by yourself? And she grabbed her face just like last time, and she wept, like full body weeping. And all the air came out of the room as they realized I remembered this girl. And I looked at her. I said, I never forgot your face. I thought about you almost every day, wondering what happened to you. And now you're here in front of me. The mathematical odds that you would get saved, get out a year early, and even know about this organization and want to come up here on the same day. She got up and left the room. And I looked around at the guy still in there, like, what am I supposed to do? What do you even say? I mean, this is so unbelievable. So I walked into the kitchen. I just hugged her. I said, I remember your face. You were the girl that looked like she didn't belong there. And she said, I haven't cried since that night. I tried to be strong for my son. She carries his ashes and a charm on her necklace. And I said, I don't think I cried since that night either. So we just sat in the room, and I said, why don't we pray? Because I don't know what else to do right now. That was for me. And that was the week I had prayed. I was in part-time ministry at this point, and God had been sort of pushing me to dive in full-time, but I was afraid. And I had asked him specifically, would you please give me some peace about this? Because I need more money than what I'm looking at right now if we're going to make this work. And I drove up that morning and met her, and I knew right away, well, I don't think God could speak any more clearly than this. So that was a moment for me that was just breathtaking. And there have been others like that. In fact, I was at a children's shelter, and there was a girl who had a post-traumatic stress syndrome, and she had a trigger right in front of me because another girl wanted to sing me a song. This girl was like suicidal, incredibly unstable girl. Her employer, the staffers at the shelter, wouldn't let her spend any more time with me, so she went into a meltdown. And this other girl watching this happen has a trigger, and she just starts sobbing and wailing about her grandfather and how he used to abuse her. And I'm standing there going, well, if only I hadn't come to serve, none of this would have happened. This is my fault.
Yeah.
It all broke down. So they took her into this little chapel, and I grabbed my guitar, and I looked up and prayed. I said, God, you've got to let me do something. This is not fair. Mm. I came here to help, and this whole situation has just gone to hell. So they brought her out of the prayer room, and I said, could I sing to you? And she said, she just kind of nodded her head, but was very much like, don't touch me. Mm-hmm. So I sat down about four chairs away, and I played in their absence, and she sang every word of the song. And when I got done, I looked at her. I said, how do you know that song? She said, that's my favorite song. It saved my life like twice.
Wow.
So what are you talking about? How do you know? Where did you hear it? She said, sometimes they play it at my church. And she mentioned some church I'd never heard of in some city I've never been to. Mm-hmm. I said, that's my song. I wrote that song. I wrote that song years ago. And she started crying again. I said, you need to understand that's too weird to be weird, right? And she chuckled, and I said, could I come sit by you? And she said, yeah. And so I sat down, and we talked more about her life, awful, awful, awful existence. I played another song for her, and that was another one of those moments where God, in that moment, really answered a prayer of mine, but also did something supernatural. I mean, just unbelievable. Of all the songs she wanted to hear at that moment, it was that song. She just happened to be sitting in front of the guy that wrote it. And that just happened to be the one I wanted to sing to her. So it's been things like that. You know, God has continued to go before me as I lean on him every day. I mean, I am running ministry. I got a wife, two kids, a third on the way. I mean, we're day to day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bread to mouth. But God just continues to provide and show me that the reality we live in is so skewed. You know, he's my boss, and he just makes sure we're fed and safe. And that's enough for me.
And it's more than worth it, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had no words to describe. I just know I'm not going to waste my life. I want to get to the throne and tell him I did everything I could.
Yeah.
That's all I want.
Hey, Jeremy, you know, a lot, not all, but many people listening to us right now, they're believers or Christians, or maybe God just prompted them to tune in at this moment. They've never listened before. But challenge that person to maybe to take that step of faith in whatever way God is leading them, to go all in for Jesus Christ, to go where he leads, and to let go of the other things that are holding us back. How do we do
that? It's funny, Darla, you would bring that up. I was just having that exact conversation last night with some of my friends that I bring into the shelters with me. My theory has been to push the limits. We like to be comfortable, And for those that are comfortable, you're going to get to heaven, and you're going to have to explain that to God. And I wonder sometimes if God is going to show you the comparisons of what your life was versus what it was supposed to be. All the opportunities you missed, all the lives that could have been saved right in front of you, but you didn't do anything. And my theory has been to push the limits. I believe if I put my wife and kids first, well, God first, wife and children second, ministry third, ministry never overtaking, becoming a mistress, so to speak, that God will just go before me and bless what I do, that I'm going out in faith and righteousness and my love for him and love for people, and he will just step out in whatever I do and bless it. And I want to test those limits because I've seen him now do unbelievable things simply because I did. Mm-hmm. He said, do something, and so I did. And the irony is almost everyone in the Bible, when God first called them, refused. Moses was like, not me, I don't speak good, make my brother do it. Jonah ran into the belly of a whale. Ananias was like, I don't want to go get that guy Saul out of wherever he is. He killed my friends. The only person in the Bible, as far as I can tell, where God called and they answered was a little boy named Samuel. I don't want to be that guy that thinks of all the reasons I shouldn't do something. It's too much money. It's too much work. What if I get too attached to this or that or what, when, who, where, why? I don't care anymore. God, do you want me to do it or not? Then speak to me as clearly as you can, since you don't speak through burning bushes anymore, and let me know that you'll go with me. But the reality is most Christians are unwilling to do those kind of things precisely because we have not grasped the concept of grace and the depravity of our own sin and what we've been saved from. We owe it to God to bring him everything and to give him everything we have in return for him giving everything for us on the cross. That's the absolute least, the absolute least I can give back to him is everything. So what I've encouraged Christians to, whatever phase you are in life, I'm not saying you quit your job and move into a cave, okay, or move to Africa, but here we are in America. There are great needs in this country. You don't have to be in Haiti or you know, Venezuela to reach people for the gospel, but wherever God has you in life, I just ask folks, are you being a good steward with your money and with your free time? And the numbers, darling, unfortunately, are not good. George Barna, the statistics on his website continue to eviscerate the church. We use porn more than the average non-Christian uses porn. You're more likely to be addicted to porn if you're a fundamentalist believer in any kind of religion. We rarely read our Bible. We rarely pray. We go to church maybe twice a month. The devil has neutered the church through pornography and entertainment and boredom. And he knows that he can't just destroy us, he can't just burn us. The more you persecute the church, the faster we grow. And here we are in America, just watching porn and watching TV and going to church and every now and then we send some money to an orphan in Africa, and we feel good about ourselves. But the reality is the entire landscape of this country would change if Christians would do their job. There are almost 500,000 kids in the foster program in America, and they're there because we didn't reach their parents, and we refused to take them into our homes as our own children, even though God adopts us into his home as his children. We had no business being in there. So I've asked Christians to just do something. Just stand up and just go do something. I don't care if you're Catholic, Methodist, Lutheran, whatever. Can we agree on Jesus Christ? Mm-hmm. And can we just go love people? I don't care about the denominations anymore. I don't care about theological differences. I just care about Jesus. Can we go tell people about Jesus? And can we do something significant with our lives? So that's what I've asked Christians to consider. Let's just get up and go do something, because the world is burning and we're just sitting by and large and watching it, waiting for Jesus to come back.
Jeremy, thank you. Thank you for your time today. Again, Jeremy Darling with the Salvage Project. He's going to be at Cooley Rock Church in Onalaska this morning from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. and then also at the Salvation Army in La Crosse tomorrow. And you can find all that information on our community calendar. Jeremy, thank you for the challenge. Appreciate your ministry.
Thanks for letting me come on and talk.
Yeah, I pray God will continue to bless you and provide and guide, and I know he will. You know, we make ourselves available. He is a faithful God.
Amen. God bless you guys. Thanks for what you're doing, and we'll see you.
Okay, sounds good. You know, as I always say, none of us can do everything. There's so much, so many needs, as Jeremy was talking about, so much that needs to be done. But each of us can do something to make a difference for Jesus Christ. So let's go out with this one from Matthew West. Let's do something.